Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, host of the Riderflex podcast and founder and CEO of our day job recruiting firm, Riderflex. We hope you enjoy this episode. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast for updates and news. Finally, if you haven't already, check out the series of books we've published on hiring, interviewing, and overall career advice titled The Riderflex Guide, available on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Most homeowners don't have the time or expertise to properly take care of their home, which causes costly issues to arise. That's where Kura Home Maintenance comes in. We're a full-service, routine maintenance company that was developed by a certified home inspector. Each quarter, we service our clients' homes following manufacturers' recommendations to properly maintain all the necessary appliances. We provide the materials and expertise to prolong the life of your property, creating a healthy and efficient environment for your family. From top to bottom, we'll maintain and service your home. To get started, we have a property inspection to determine what needs to be maintained, and a maintenance plan is created based on your preferences. From refrigerator coils to filters, vents, and drains, we do it all, and we do it well. Contact us today for your free routine maintenance inspection. And never worry about your maintenance again.
Scott Berman back on the Riderflex podcast. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm great, Steve, and I appreciate you having me on. It's good to see you.
Man, you are always a joy to talk to, my friend. You can come back to the show anytime you want. Really, seriously.
Thanks. Thank you.
What's going on in the NBA? You're still doing your gig there. What, I guess it's playoff time. This is an exciting time of year for you.
It is. Yeah. I'm still keeping stats, and we won last night. So we're in the playoffs, and we play the Knicks starting on Saturday.
Okay.
And yeah, you know, it could be a good run or we could be done in a week.
I remember you on the last show, I think. When you're taking the stats up in the stands, are you still next to the crowd? So if there's an annoying fan screaming in your ear, you still gotta yes. Deal with that.
Yes, it's funny you remember that. Yeah, there's fans literally like in a few inches behind us, and they are loud sometimes, and we have to hear each other talk and call out the plays and stuff. So we've gotten used to it, and we do have headphones, but it's funny.
the reason I remember that specific story you told is because as I get older, people just get on my fucking nerves. Like I mean people just drive me nuts. For example, I'm retired from movie theaters. Like I just can't do it.
I know.
Several years ago, my wife and I went to see the Revenant, the DiCaprio movie with the bear scene or whatever. I told her that night. I was like, that's it. I'm done. I was like, I can't do it. The people, the noises, the cell phones, the smacking, the crunching. I can't do it.
Yeah. So. It's rough, man. And Sixer fans are not exactly quiet. You know, last night they were booing. We had a bad first half and it was like, boo, you know, and it's like right in our ears, you know, and we're trying to keep score. It's funny.
You know, I'm not a huge basketball person. However, I did get caught up a little bit in the whole Caitlin Clark, craze a little bit. I made the mistake of watching one or two clips of her on TikTok. And then, but of course, you know, then it's in my feed, you know, forever.
Yeah.
And so then I was actually calling my co-founder, Scott. And I was like, who's this Caitlin Clark girl? She's pretty good, actually.
She's good. She's real good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's exciting for women's hoops. They've never had more ratings and people interested, so it's great for that sport.
You ever see anybody shoot from? I mean,
she's incredible.
Some of the shots she throws up, I'm like, what the hell? Like, well, I can't even.
Just long range, yeah, long range threes, yeah, very impressive.
Yeah, pretty cool. So I did watch a little bit of that, but. So you're still doing the stats thing, but that's part-time, right? That's just a part-time gig.
Yes.
You've been doing it for what, 30 years?
36 years.
Jesus.
Since I graduated college, actually, yeah.
You know all the skeletons. You know the family secrets. You know all the secrets. They can't get rid of you now. You know too much.
I'm part of the furniture there, I think. And the guy I work with actually has been there for 62 years or something like that.
Are you serious?
So the two, yeah. He's been there since the 60s, like 65 or 62 or something like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's, yep.
Wow. Okay.
So.
All right. Well, tell us what else is going on, my friend. You got a few things happening.
Yeah.
What would you, let's talk about cannabis first, a little bit cannabis.
Sure.
Remind the listeners what your involvement is in that sector, and then kind of maybe we'll
Sure.
talk a little bit about what's happening in the industry.
Sure. So we have a venture fund called the Panther Opportunity Fund. We've been investing since about 2015, 16 into different types of companies in the sector. We're in like 20 different subsectors. So we have some technology companies that are working with cannabis. We have some that are retailers and growers. And, we look at the whole picture, kind of like the picks and shovels from, the gold rush. So, there's good news and bad news with anything. It's that the industry is really moving forward. There's a lot more states and cities that have cannabis. A lot of the companies on our portfolio are doing okay, but not super great. They can't really go public on the big exchanges, so the exits are harder to come by. But, we're still excited about where the future is. It's just taking a little longer than we would like.
Gotcha. And can you talk about how big the portfolio is, or how big the fund is? Are you taking on any more cash? Are you still looking at potential investments? Like, where are you a little bit?
Yeah, so the fund, we have several funds and several SPVs. Total, we've probably deployed 20 to 30 million over the last 7, 8 years. We haven't taken in a lot of new cash. So part of the issue is that our original investors are not really putting a lot more in because they haven't gotten a huge return at this point. I'm one of them, and so that's the way it goes. You return a lot of money in the first fund, and then the second fund is easier. We are deploying capital. It's not as much as we were. We're mostly backing up the companies in our portfolio that are growing, and we're giving them some more capital. We haven't done a lot of new deals lately, but we're always open to new deals and new money.
Yeah, the cannabis industry, boy, and we're recording this, by the way, for the listeners on April 18th, 2024. Wow, what a different world from 5 years ago, right, Scott? I mean, wow. As a recruiting firm, our day job here at Rotoflex, 5 years ago, I had executives from all over the place, from Chevron, from Coca-Cola, from wherever. I want to get into cannabis. I want to get into cannabis. Everybody wants to get into cannabis, right? Now executives are kind of running the other direction. They're like, oh shit, this didn't pay out as fast as I thought. I think I'll get out of here. It's a different world. Why is that? What has happened in your opinion, Scott?
Well, there's two things that have happened, and again, good and bad, right? So on the good side, more and more states have legalized adult use or medical. We now have 25 or so adult use states, 38 or something medical. And so there's a lot more people that are buying cannabis. The numbers, like New Jersey, just topped like $1 billion or something already in cannabis sales. So there is a lot of revenue being generated and a lot more stores opening and grows opening, et cetera. One of the biggest problems is federal regulations. Specifically, there's a law on the books. It's a tax law called 280E. And it means marijuana is a Schedule I drug on the same level as heroin, which is ridiculous. And it's been that
Ridiculous.
way since 1970. There is the good news, hopefully, there is movement to change that. The DEA recommended that it be rescheduled. I'm sorry, the Health and Human Services said we should reschedule it to a Schedule III. The DEA now has to approve that, which most people think they will. Once they do that, that tax rule goes away. And just to keep it real simple, the tax rule says that you can't deduct normal business expenses off your taxes if you're Schedule I drug.
Which is the
So that.
which is by the way, that's the whole reason to be an entrepreneur. It's to write off expenses.
Yeah. But imagine you have a normal business and you can't deduct your electric bill or your, whatever. So it's really hard to make a real profit in the industry. So a lot of these companies are not making money. They're generating tons of revenue, but they're paying a lot in taxes.
Okay.
So that's been a problem.
And of course, the investors over the years, at first, they knew that, but they thought things would change. They thought, well, this is going to pay off. You know, yeah, this kind of sucks for now, but it's going to get better, blah, blah, blah.
That's me.
Yeah. Now you've had guys in it for five, six, seven, 8 years, and they're like, oh, boy, okay, yeah. And in addition to early investors getting impatient, also now there's not a lot of new money coming in, right? Pins are down, so to speak, still at this time.
That's exactly the problem. And there's also a lot of good opportunity now. So there's a lot of distressed companies, certainly. So if you have capital, like if I could start all over again and start right now investing in cannabis, it would be a better situation because there's good opportunities. There's companies that are really driving a lot of business. And we do expect these changes in the laws. There's also a banking law called Safer Banking, which would make it a lot easier for companies to borrow money to build their companies, and their cost of capital would go down. So that would be a catalyst in the industry too. That's something we've been expecting for 3-4 years that's stuck in Congress.
Yeah, you know, you're right. A lot of distressed companies, I'm sure. I'm surprised more vultures aren't swooping down and grabbing those up, interestingly. Yeah. Or are they? I don't know.
I think they're starting to do that, but I actually think a lot of people are waiting for these rule changes. Okay. I think that will, I fully expect when that happens, and you know, we are in an election year, and so it is possible that it goes a little faster, that I think a lot of people will come off the sidelines and start rolling up, consolidating M&A, and even new operations, because you know, there's huge demand. You know, a lot of there are companies that are generating, like there's a Curaleaf and GTI, companies like that, hundreds of millions in revenue, 100 stores, you know, so on. So, you know, the industry is plodding along. It's just, as you said, it's going slower than any of us thought.
I think what I want to do is I want to set aside some cash to invest in certain cannabis stocks right before that tax law changes.
Yes.
Because I'm guessing all the stocks will go up if that changes, right? I mean, I would think, I don't know, I'm not, by the way, this is not financial advice for the listeners, but I mean, I would think, right? Wouldn't it? Logical.
100%. Absolutely. And, you know, it's whenever there's any kind of news, like once the Health and Human Services said we should reschedule it from 1 to 3, the next day, all the stocks popped.
Okay.
But guess what happened 3 days later? They went back down again because people realized that we have no idea when this is going to happen.
I got you. Yeah.
So if it actually comes out and officially happens, and I, you know, 420 is in 2 days. I, you know, if I'm the Biden campaign, I'm making a big announcement on 420 that we're reclassifying marijuana. You'll get some votes on that. But as soon as that happens, the stocks will certainly pop.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, so you got the cannabis fund still happening, and we're hoping for some changes. And if you do get some changes in some of these laws, things could turn positive for you and your investors pretty quickly, I would think.
Very quickly, yep.
Okay. And you're an investor / serial entrepreneur right now. I mean, right, you got several things going on, my friend. You're like me. You like to stay busy. I don't know if you noticed knew this, but me and my partner invested in a home maintenance services company too. So we got that going on.
Okay.
I like to be diversified in the portfolio.
I do too.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, and I don't like doing the same thing every day. I realized that in my older years.
So tell me about Flower Chef Foods. Tell me about it.
Yeah, this is exciting. And it's not cannabis, which makes it even more interesting. So I met, there's a woman I'm friendly with out in Seattle, Washington. She's been a chef for many years, and she's really into plant-based cooking. She just put out a cookbook called The Art of Harvest. And we're building a platform to sell plant-based food. She actually has hemp seed oil blends and hemp seed pasta, which we import from Italy. And so we're putting it up on Amazon and an e-commerce store. And we have the cookbook, and we're also doing events. So we did an event in Las Vegas where we made, you know, a bunch of plant-based appetizers. We invited a bunch of VIPs, and we're just promoting plant-based cooking. And it's really interesting. I've gotten really into the food space, and it's big. The plant-based world is growing, and it's exciting, and it's also really good for the planet and good for, health, your general health.
Now, let me ask you a couple of things here. I want to, I'm going to sound super ignorant, but when, maybe for the listeners, when you say plant-based, right,
Yes.
do you mean vegan? Do you mean no meat? Do you mean, what is your definition? What is your commoner definition of plant-based?
So it's very similar to vegan, but it's not completely vegan. You don't have to be completely vegan to have plant-based,
Okay.
right? So it's basically, a lot of vegetables, pastas and things like that. And it's really no animal products, no,
Okay.
meat, fish, chicken. Plant-based chicken they make out of like soy and tofu and seitan and things like that.
Okay.
So it's a lot of veggies. And it's very, there's a lot of studies now about the benefits of a plant-based diet. And this is something interesting that her name is Julie Hauser, and she says, I want people to eat plant-based twice a week at least. We're not trying to change behavior. I told her one day, I'm like, I'm not gonna stop eating cheesesteaks. I'm from Philadelphia, but she's like, hey, just try a couple times a week to work it into your diet. And it's pretty easy and it tastes good. So part of it is teaching people what it means to answer your question, like, hey, this is what a plant-based diet looks like. This is how to shop for it and how to cook with it and how to make it good. So it's a lot of education which goes into it. And I'm learning a lot about it as well.
Now, were you into this before you met this lady?
Not really.
And you said you were friendly with her. What does that mean? What does that mean, Scott?
She actually started out making, she made a cannabis infused oil.
No. I mean the social. I'm talking about the social aspect of this. Is this a
No,
friend? Are you? Is this a
she's
friend?
a
I could.
friend.
Oh, I didn't know if this was
Total
like.
friend.
I didn't know
She's
if this was.
married and has two great kids. And
Oh,
she actually, no,
I was
nothing.
hoping for a more. I was hoping for a more entertaining story.
No, I'm sorry about that. But there actually is an interesting other backstory because she's
Okay,
a
cool.
breast cancer survivor and she was pregnant with her second child and she got diagnosed with breast cancer and she completely changed her diet onto a plant-based diet and her health improved a lot and she's an evangelist basically, but she feels like that helped her a lot in her
I
recovery
see.
from
I
cancer.
see. I see. How'd you meet
So
her?
I met her at a cannabis show because
Okay.
she had this cannabis oil. And she was selling it. It's being sold in Washington State. Like you can use infused oil and
Okay.
drip it on your food, and it has THC in it.
Okay.
But that infused part of the cannabis space is really small.
Okay.
And so we decided. So I met her and was trying to help her raise money for that deal.
I
It was
see.
hard to raise money. And then we were like, you know what? Maybe we should look at the food space where there's a lot more investment and a much bigger market, and no limitations on marketing either, which is important. Because cannabis, it's hard to market. With food, you can market it everywhere.
I see. And did your fund put money in?
No, it was too early for our fund.
Oh, okay.
Actually, it was too early of a deal for our fund, so we didn't do that. And our fund also isn't doing anything in the food space really, so.
But you took so you took you went in with her as a partner. What's the makeup of the business?
So I'm a partner and marketing director.
Okay.
So I'm helping her build the company and, just building partnerships and we're doing these trade shows. So it's still early.
Okay.
But I think there's a lot of opportunity in this space. There's a lot of celebrity chefs out there that have, a cooking show or they have a cookbook or they have a line of stuff. And so we're trying to build her up as a personality as well
I
and
see.
get her on TV and things like that.
Maybe she needs to be on the Rider Flex podcast.
Oh, that would be great. That'd be really great. She's very interesting and has a lot to say.
Can you buy the product right now? Where can people find it? What, yeah, where are we at?
Flowerchefffoods.com.
Okay.
That's our web address, and you can buy product there. The pasta is not quite ready yet, but it will be here soon. We're bringing it in from Italy. We're also going to be making tomato sauces from Italy. The Amazon store, Amazon is not so easy these days. To get up there and running on Amazon. So we're working on that.
Okay.
So I expect in the next couple of months it'll be pretty easily available.
Okay, very
The
good. Just you.
cookbook's on Amazon though. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Just you and her for now, and then outsourcing whatever.
Yeah, we have a team actually. We have a couple other people that have come on board, and so we're enjoying the ride so far, but we'd like to expand the business soon.
Is there a cash raise happening that you want to alert anybody about?
Yes, we are raising capital. We have a commitment from a lead investor, but we'd love to take in a bridge round now,
Okay.
and we're looking for strategic investors that have connections in the food space. Good people that can get us into retail. Ultimately, we want to get into Whole Foods and Giant and retail chains like that.
Okay.
But we do need to raise more capital to get that done.
Okay, very good. All right. We'll definitely make sure we highlight that for her, for you, and for the team. So now are you, what are you, twice a week with the veggies? Are you twice a week, or what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm eating plant-based twice a week. I get
Okay.
these chicken patties. I like plant-based chicken patties. I get them at Wegmans. They're really good.
Well, how do you
Season them up a little, of course, but yeah.
I have a qu I have yeah, really. I have a question though. But can you say the word chicken with like how do you say chicken patty when there's no chicken? How do you I don't understand how that
You just
works.
call it plant-based chicken. That's what it says on the labels.
That's interesting.
So yeah, I know. It's I think and I think listen, it's confusing. This is part of the deal here is we need education.
I
We
agree.
need to tell people how to get it and if you go to supermarkets now though, every supermarket has a section
I
for
got you.
plant-based there's like an olive oil cheese company that we work with called Good Planet Cheese,
Okay.
which is not made from dairy. So people that don't like dairy or don't want to have cow milk or whatever, you can have your other cheese in a different way. So it's there's a lot more than I knew about that's made plant-based. I don't love all of it, to be honest with you, but a lot of it is actually pretty good. Yeah, some of it's not great.
It is confusing though. I mean, all joking aside, can my wife will bring home something called oat milk or whatever, almond milk, and I'm always asking her, I'm like, I don't understand how they get away with using the word milk on the carton when it's not milk. Like I don't get that, and that confuses me because I'm like,
Yes.
is this milk? I don't get it. Like, and so some of it is a little bit confusing.
Absolutely. And that's part of I want to do videos, a lot of videos and podcasts, stuff like this. I want to get her out there too, because
Yeah.
she's really good. She convinced me to, it with it. And she's very compelling when she talks about the benefits
Now
physically
does
and for the planet.
okay. Now does she think that the cow farts are polluting us and all that? Is she go down that path? Does she?
Absolutely. And the belching. Cow belching.
Okay,
There's a there's some
I definitely got to
yeah,
have
go
her on the
ahead.
show. I got to have her on the show for sure.
If we if you know if we want to actually do like just have everyone eat plant-based for a day, make it plant-based
I
holiday,
like that.
right?
I think that's a good idea. I like it.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
do too, yeah. But I think that if we all just took a little step in that direction, there will be benefits for the planet. This hemp seed oil too. Hemp is a very good, plant for the planet. It's very simple and easy and cheap to grow, and it's healthier than other things. Like so, the more we can promote hemp in food, I think that's another good development.
I forgot to ask you, speaking of hemp and kind of going backwards just a tad, I forgot to ask you about CBD products and CBD in general. Sorry, going backwards for a minute, but I really wanted to ask you this. What happened to the CBD craze? Like, what happened to the CBD was going to like save the planet, cure all the illnesses, take all your pains away,
Right.
CBD and everything. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, what happened to that?
It didn't go away. The hype has gone down.
Okay.
I think the problem, and it also goes back to education too. There was so much stuff came on the market. A
Oh
lot of it
yeah.
wasn't really that good.
Yes.
Some of it wasn't like full spectrum is something that's good in CBD. And so people weren't sure what to do. It was also just over the benefits were overhyped, although the benefits are really good. It does help a lot with inflammation. And there's a lot of options now. If you want to try, I always recommend like trying CBD for something like back pain. Instead of taking a pill, try CBD. See if it works. It might not work, but I think it's still happening. It's just sort of hype has died down a little bit because there was too
Okay.
much out there.
Yeah, it was I agree. It was going crazy where it was almost like CBD is going to cure all of our problems. It maybe wasn't that bad, but that's kind of how it seemed. Okay. How about psilocybin mushrooms? Are you going to, you're going to dabble in that?
I am dabbling in that actually. Several different developments there. I'm glad you brought this up. Number one, I'm involved with a investment into a psilocybin, low dose psilocybin for depression and PTSD and severe mental stuff.
Okay.
And they're developing it now. They're doing clinical trials and it's really effective. And they want to replace SSRIs, which is obviously a humongous market, you know, Lexapro and Xanax and all that. And they want to substitute that with a psilocybin, low dose, non-psychoactive, that really has shown incredible results and it's safer for you than some of these other things. So it's more like a biotech play. There's a lot of biotech, you know, people trying to make psilocybin into something that's good. It's got a lot of good properties to it. And I think there's a bright future ahead. And people are also just much more into it personally, like just trying it, microdosing. A lot of people I know have started microdosing now and getting a lot of benefit out of it.
I've heard that. I have not tried it, but I have heard really nothing but positive about it. I mean, just all positive news about microdosing and, you know, using it instead of some of these other pills that are just horrible for you. So, yeah, I've heard a bunch of good news. I have not traveled, so to speak, myself yet, but I've had many friends tell me I need to. I don't know. I just haven't been in the right place I haven't been in the right moment yet. You know,
First, I always tell people it's certainly not for everyone and do it, get into it slowly and do a lot of research. Before I started going down that road, I studied, I read, there's a fantastic thing of, it's called Fantastic Fungi. Highly recommend this documentary that, I learned a lot about the mushroom in general. And then I kind of slowly tiptoed into it. And then the more, you know, like you said, it was 100% positive, the experiences and the general well-being and things like that. And I just started incorporating it more into my daily activities. Not That's daily, great. But, you know, weekly.
You haven't had any like LSD moments where you see like spiders crawling out of the wall or something in big time? Have you ever been, you know, super scared? Like, holy shit.
You know, no, I'm happy to say, and I have LSD I've had as well. I like to go to music festivals and do some of that stuff. And I have had nothing but good experiences. I have been with people that have had bad experiences, actually. This is why I say you have to be in the right frame of mind. You have to have the right set and setting. Be with, you know, good friends, people you trust when you try this stuff. But, you know, if you have stuff going on that's not so great mentally, it could be bad. It's not, you know, so, but if you're, you know, if you're in a good place and you want to just expand your mind and build more connections, it's very interesting. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in the tech space, are regularly doing this stuff.
It's probably better for you than nightly alcohol and all the other bad things you can do to your body.
Not probably, Steve. Definitely.
Yeah. Right. Definitely.
Definitely better than alcohol. And I like to have alcohol too, but this is better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes when I go to like a music festival or whatever, and I'm taking some psilocybin, I will drink less booze. And
yeah, that's a positive development. That's a good thing. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
If you ever come to Colorado, you'd be the perfect guy to ease me in.
Yeah.
You know,
I've helped a bunch of people sort of get introduced to it. And it's been a pretty positive experience across the board.
I don't know how many times I've heard Rogan, you know, and Rogan just raves about it. He's just like, if people would just do mushrooms, we wouldn't have wars and everybody would just love each other.
Go that far, but it could help.
Okay. Tell me about your podcast. Let's talk about it. Give the name of the show, where they can find it, and tell us what it's about.
The name is called The Game of Zen. Can be found on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And basically, I started studying with a Zen Buddhist teacher during COVID. I connected with him. I was sitting at home a lot, and we started doing one. He's a coach. His name is Paul Augustinelli, zenatwork.org. That's his website. And I just really got along with him. I started getting a lot out of the studying, and I love to study and learn about Buddhism, mindfulness, meditation. And I just said to him one day last year, I'm like, you're so good at what you do, you should do a podcast. And he's like, yeah, I've been thinking about it. You want to help me do it? And I'm like, me? And I was like his student. And I'm like, I would like to help you do it. So, you know, we talk about like Buddhist philosophies, but he's also an entrepreneur. So what we do is talk about how to apply these principles, which are very practical. Zen is a very practical teaching, and apply them to your work situations or your personal life. So we bring up something that the Buddha taught, like the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism. And then we say, okay, this is, you know, what causes suffering. The first noble truth of Buddhism is that everybody has suffering and we can't avoid it. So you know, when you think about that and you're in work, like what's causing you suffering at work? How do you deal with it? How do you get over it and get past it and so on? So it's a really joy to do it. And I love when people listen and give me feedback. It's fantastic.
And do you have guests, or do you guys just talk about different topics? And you know, and who's a typical guest?
Well, we've had entrepreneurs who are also big into spirituality.
Okay.
So we like, you know, we recently interviewed a guest that has a wilderness retreat business where he takes executives out into cool places and they do group sessions and they teach them and they do mindfulness training and things like that. Like he also climbs mountains, you know, he was a fantastic guest. Then we had a guy named Pat Croce, who used to be the part owner of the Philadelphia 76ers, who I met years ago. And when he left the NBA and he became, you know, really into Buddhism, and he has a Sangha down in Florida. And so we interviewed him about his entrepreneurial career and how these teachings helped him, you know, get to where he is today. It was a fascinating chat.
And so you're a Buddhist, I guess, so to speak. Is that how you classify yourself, or how do you label yourself?
It's a really good question, because I don't consider myself a full Buddhist. You know, I also think of Buddhism as a way of life and not a religion.
Okay.
And that's also an important distinction. You know, I am not moving to a monastery and shaving my head anytime soon. But I have an ultimate respect for those folks, you know, that live there. But to me, you know, it's part of my, you know, I have a lot of things that I think about in my daily life. And now the Buddhist philosophy comes into how I live now. Yeah. But it's just part of what I do. It's not a complete thing.
And let's go down the religious path for a minute. Just for, this is a fascinating topic. Ask you a few questions. So do you believe in God or a God, or what?
Yeah, boy, that's a good one, Steve.
Yeah. Who do you pray? Do you pray? If you're having a super bad day, are you praying to something, somebody? Who are you praying to?
No, I don't pray to a God. I don't necessarily believe that there's some guy with a gray beard up there looking down and checking on all of us. I don't necessarily believe that, but I do believe that there is a higher power of something out there.
Okay.
And I believe, you know, my religion is Judaism, and I'm a very proud Jewish kid, boy, man, whatever. But I also don't believe in, you know, everything that the Jewish religion teaches us about God. I don't believe everything that the Christian religion teaches about heaven and hell and things like that. I think some of it, I hate to say it, some of it is made up over a long, long period of time. I do believe in the core principles of a lot of those religions, actually, you know, being a good person, being charitable, being, you know, a good community person, things like that, honest and diligent and all that. But I don't believe that you just say, please, God, I hope things get better tomorrow. And then someone says, OK, ping, you know, everything's better. I might be wrong, but, you know, I call it. Me and my friends came up with a term called the natural mystic. There's a Bob Marley song and it says the natural mystic blowing through the air. Right. And I don't know what it means. I just feel like there is a higher power out there that when we interact with other people and we do good. I believe in karma. You know, if you're a good person, some good things will happen to you. If you're a bad person, you know, things, you know. So I think that there's something about that, but I don't know. I mean, I'm still trying to figure it out.
I know, me too. You know, I go through these stages for myself. Now, I keep in mind, I grew up in Oklahoma, and my mother was like kind of Pentecostal, so to speak, Assembly of God Christian. And so, you know, when I was little, we were in church all the time. And of course, as I got to be in high school, I rebelled and stopped going, you know, the typical usual stuff. But anyway, now as a grown man, I find it interesting. I go through these stages where I'll go from one extreme to the other. Sometimes I'll be thinking to myself, this is what I think. I have this theory where, you know, the cavemen were sitting around the campfire and they're all beating each other over the heads. They're dragging each other's wives off. You know, they're just living this total fucking chaos life. And two or three of the elders are sitting around the fire and they're like, man, we have got to, like, we got to put some rules in place around here. And, yeah. And one of the guys says, yeah, well, how are we going to enforce it? And then somebody else is like, I know what we can do. We can make people think that if they fuck up and they don't follow these rules, they're going to go to a really bad place when they die. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to scare the shit out of them.
Yes. I agree with that, man.
And I think that's very, I don't know if it went down exactly like that over several thousand years, but it's possible.
No question. I believe that. I totally agree with you. And you know, here's an interesting thing about Buddhism is that the Buddha, back in that day, those days, there was people called Brahmins or something. They were like the priests of the day. And they, one day the Buddha saw a priest, they were slaughtering animals to sacrifice them to the gods. And the Buddha's like, what are you doing? And you're like, well, we want to please the gods. And he's like, you're going to please the gods by killing that sheep over there? And, you know, he basically called bullshit and all that, you know? And he's like, no, just, you know, we want to be with the earth and, you know, whatever. So, you know, I think that's sort of why I was attracted to that, because it's not really, it's not based on fear. Like, if you don't do this, you're going to go to hell or, you know, I don't know. It's like, I feel like it's just more sensible.
Yeah, so I don't like the whole fear. I don't like the whole fear-based thing either. That's what used to piss me off. Final thing on that before we move to another topic is, so I will do the campfire story in my head, but then I will revert back when I'm having a really shitty week and I will be like, please God, you know, so I still bounce back and forth.
Yeah, well, you know, you brought up and, you know, like there's a lot of indoctrination. I went to Hebrew school and they taught me a lot of stuff, you know, and then, you know, I moved on from that world, but I started forming different opinions and I still believe in a lot of what I was taught, but not all of it. That's the way I look at it.
That's kind of where I'm at. Yeah, I still believe in some things, but definitely not all of it. Yeah, my mom still tries to resave me every time I go home.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. My mom too.
You know, I'm like, mom. Yes, mom, no. Mom, please stop. Yeah. Like, please, mom, please. Can we just... I wanted to, with some of the minutes we have left, I wanted to ask you about, because you're a marketing... I mean, you're an entrepreneur, you're an investor, you're a business guy, you're an executive. You're wearing several hats, but marketing is always a passion for you, right? I mean, marketing is your thing. Tell me what your thoughts are around this rapid advancement of AI and what it's doing to marketing, to the marketing industry. I mean, what are you seeing? What are you thinking? Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm so excited about this. And I've actually been taking courses on prompt engineering.
Okay.
And trying to figure out how to use these chatbots to do marketing. And it's changing. I've been doing this probably 20 years or so of digital marketing, and it's really changing everything. And I do think it's going to change a lot of businesses fundamentally. And one of the things that it's doing is it's enabling marketers to look at audiences and people and shoppers and customers a lot differently, because it can handle, like, you could take 100,000, 500,000 customers for a website or something, and you could do a lot more learning on who's buying what, when, and how.
Faster.
With it way faster. One of the things I love about it more than anything is writing ad copy. Steve, this is incredible. Like, I used to sit there and it would take me 4 hours to write 20 Google ads, and some of them would be good, some of them wouldn't. Now I go to ChatGPT, write me a Google search ad for blah, blah, blah. And I instantly have these really well-written ads, you know? Mm-hmm. So now you could do a lot more ad variations. Like you could, you know, you could put 500 ad variations into your AdWords account and test which one's better, you know? So there's all sorts of that. Also, you know, back to the food business, you know, we're using AI to write blog posts.
Sure.
And I'm just saying, you know, write a blog post on how plant-based food can save the planet. And boom, I got a genius. Like, it's like having a genius assistant sitting right here on my laptop, you know? So I think we're just at the very beginning of this too, of how it's going to change marketing. And so I'm excited about it.
Really appreciate that. That opinion, that outlook that you just described, I could not agree more that as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, anybody, like you should be embracing what this stuff can do to help you, to make you more efficient, to make you faster, to make you smarter. In my mind, it allows, I could go on and on about this for hours, but in my mind, it allows me to be more creative thinking because I don't have to spend time doing the tactical. I have the idea and I'm delegating the tactical to the AI, right? And so it frees your mind up for just more ideas and more thoughts and more activity. As Scott said, for the listeners, if you are, I've done so many posts on this lately. I know people are probably getting tired of me saying it, but if you're not using AI to your advantage to move faster in your business, you are going to be left behind. The competition will crush you, period. Yes,
100%.
You better stay on top of it. And Scott, I meet candidates and clients every day, you know, and they'll be like, oh yeah, ChatGPT. Yeah, you know, I heard about it. I've used it kind of once or twice. And I'm just thinking to myself, dude.
Yeah, you got to get on it.
Dude, you got to get
on it. Your competitors will be doing it.
Your competitors are going to be doing it. And then I hear people say, and I'm ranting for a minute, I've actually had recruiters. I've actually released recruiters that worked for us because they wouldn't use the AI tools to move faster in our processes because they just, you know, they're like, well, I don't want to use that tool. And you know, they'll say like, well, I don't want to use ChatGPT to help me write the job description. You know, we should write the job description. We shouldn't have AI help us write the job description. And I go, why not? Well, and this is what they'll say. They'll go, well, you know, it's not perfect. It will make mistakes. And I go, oh, and humans don't make mistakes.
What about you? Are you perfect?
So I see the humans are perfect. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I really push back hard on that. Yeah. And then the other thing I'll tell them is I'll say, now let me get this straight. Are you using spell check and grammar check and Microsoft Word before you finish a document? Because guess what? That's AI. Okay.
Yes.
Don't be picking and choosing your AIs, you know, come on now, you know, matter of fact, you're using a computer to put all this shit down and you can talk into it and it'll type it out. I tell you what I'll do. I'm going to send you some stone tablets with like a thing and you can just chip your words into chisel. That.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm actually using it for is the podcast. And what I do now is upload the recording to an engine and it gives me the social post. So if you check me out on LinkedIn, I post about every episode. That's all coming from AI. And by the way, I edit it. You know, the simple answer is you do something in the chatbot. You don't have to take exactly what the chatbot says. Exactly. You take most of it. You edit it. You tweak it a little. So all of my LinkedIn posts for the podcast are coming from AI.
Sure.
And it takes me like minutes.
Seconds, minutes. The other thing you can do on this topic, just for the listeners, if you don't know, you can. So I take the transcripts from all of my podcasts, boom, into the chat GPTs that we've built, the GPTs we've built, the transcripts from the books that we've published. And a lot of times when I do a post or whatever, it'll put it in there. And I've worked it to sound more like me and not just a general response. And I'll even tell it like, hey, no, that's, that doesn't sound like me, like just redo it. So you don't have to just use the general response from these AI, these large language models. You can be creative and make it sound like you, to be unique.
Yes.
And you can have a unique approach. So anyway, so I'm glad to hear that, because I think some marketing firms have their head in the sand. I think a lot of marketing agencies are like, oh yeah, you know, well, our clients really want to, you know, want us to do it old school. And I'm so, okay, yeah, you're gonna go out of business. You're gonna go out of business.
I know. One idea that I've had lately is I'm starting to talk to companies about making them AI ready or whatever, you know, like, hey, your business, you know, let me take a look at your business and then make some suggestions of how I could come in and help you use AI to, and maybe it's to help your SEO value of your website by redoing the copy or putting more, you know, words in there and so on. So I think there's a play here for marketers to say, right, I'm going to bring AI and help your company sell more stuff, you know? Yep. So I'm trying to consult people on some of that stuff as well.
You said it earlier. If you're using it right, it's like having the smartest assistant on the planet sitting right next to you. And you can just ask it to do shit for you. It's like,
it's remarkable. It blows my mind. Another really interesting thing is with search. You know, I've been a Google search, you know, advocate for a long time. And, you know, now with Gemini, the new Google thing, you can, you know, the search results are a lot different.
Yep.
And they're much more, you know, they're much better. So search is changing in a big way.
Yes.
But think about when search engines first came out, how they changed our world, you know?
By the way, speaking of people that push back, remember way back then, people were like, "Oh, you can't just look that up on Google and trust that. No, you need to get the encyclopedia out." Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now Google's a verb.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. By the way, I rarely, if I'm going to search, if I want a specific answer on something, I just put it into ChatGPT or Gemini. I don't. The whole like put it in Google and then look through links or whatever. No,
that's the old way of doing things. And that happened pretty quickly, Steve. Like
that's
the last year, really. So no, I like to listen to these guys that are really working on really crazy stuff. And it's like the Sam Altman guy and OpenAI and like what they see in the next 4 to 5 years. It blows you away, really.
I think, and I know we're almost out of time. I think, when it comes, I'm sure you've heard this Sora video thing. They're holding it back because they're, you know, they're worried about what that's going to do. I'm just guessing the ChatGPT 5 or whatever the versions are. It's there. I think they're just like, holy shit, is the planet ready for us to release this shit? Because, you know.
Yeah, I do think there's just some bad actors. Obviously, there's people in this world. There's definitely people right now that are trying to figure out how to use AI to do bad stuff and steal from people. So I think we do need guardrails and we need some regulation. So the next couple of years, you know, are going to be tricky with that.
Going to be interesting. Did you see the Figure One robot thing where the guy, he hands him the apple, he puts the dish in the... You haven't seen that one?
I didn't see that yet.
I will send you the clip. It's Figure One is the robot, and he talks to him. And he's handing the apple. He puts the dish in the thing. I saw that, and I told Kim, I'm like, I want one. I want one for our kitchen. Like, when can we order one of those?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's awesome, man.
Anyway,
it's exciting.
Scott, you are always entertaining to talk to, my friend.
Thanks, man.
Always a great guest. Really appreciate you being on the show. I know it's 6 o'clock Eastern time. Been a long day for you. Speaking of happy hours or whatever, it's time to relax a little bit, isn't it?
Thank you, buddy. Yeah, and I really appreciate coming on. It's always great to talk to you, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.